Welcome to the Audible Ecstasy Podcast. Each week we sit around and discuss the music from our past. Sometimes we agree.
I call it iconic. It's a 10. That riff is it's incredible.
Clearly a 10. This is one of the most iconic songs of the 80s.
Iconic from start to finish.
And sometimes we disagree.
The song sounds like something you might hear at your aunt's funeral.
The absolute worst lyrics ever.
With the juvenile flush on that one, I'm not dealing with that. I'm not dealing with that crap.
Thank you for listening and enjoy the show.
All right, guys, we are back with another Audible Ecstasy podcast, and this one is the final one for 2023, and we are going out with a bang. This week, it's Chris's pick. It's the classic Bon Jovi, Slippery When Wet. Guys, y'all ready to do this?
I am ready, Anthony. Let's hear your tagline. As we've mentioned before, I also have a tagline this week, so we'll throw them both out there.
It's the Audible Ecstasy Podcast. We don't give love a bad name. We just let it rock.
All right.
That's good.
Awesome. All right,
well,
awesome.
Mine is, we've seen over 21,000 faces and we've rocked them all. Because it's about how many streams our podcast has. So there you go.
There we go, kids. There we go. All right, man. Well, let's get this thing started. Track number one, Let It Rock. Hit it, Chris. Let's say this, Let It Rock. First of all, it's hair metal. We all know it. But there ain't no better way to start a hair metal album out without an anthem. Holy crap, and that's what this song is. It's an anthem. I was there. I saw this happen live way back in the day. This is fantastic. Incredible, high-energy opening tune. Enough said. This song is outstanding. I gave it a 9. Chris, what do you think about Let It Rock?
Well, as with, they did on the album New Jersey on this one as well, there's an unnecessarily long keyboard intro into this song. Ask me, if you're gonna start an album, just shot to the heart, that's where they should have started, man. I mean, this is not the best opener, I don't think. Yeah, man.
Oh, my God.
No, I see. You give love a bad name, might have been a better opener. Then follow that.
Dude, if you bring start an album like that, they missed a golden opportunity, I think, personally. So yeah, you got this keyboard intro that starts the album. Then the actual song comes in. I mean, I feel like it's a good song. I do. I don't think it's like one of the highlights of the album or anything. It's slightly generic, if I'm being honest, for me. Like I said, switch places with the next song and you'd be better off. I gave it 5.5. Yeah.
5.5 for Let
It. Fair enough. Moron. Exactly. All right, Anthony, go ahead.
Listen, I'm going to keep it real. Oh, by the way, I did go back and listen to the episode, and we did give scores on all these when we did our versus episode.
We did.
So I have my score from 4 years ago, 3 years ago, whenever we did it. I gave it a 7. Keep in mind, our scale was a little different back then. Yeah. But yeah, so now
what
I'm
did
down
I give it? Just out of
half.
Curiosity, did I give it something low?
I didn't write y'all scores
down. Okay, because I didn't go back and re-listen.
You did not go that high, I'm pretty sure, Jimmy, at the time.
Dude, re-listening this for the last week, every single day, man, I'm just like, this thing pumps you up when you drive somewhere. I'm sorry. All right, Anthony, Let It Rock.
You know, we can keep it real. We can also keep it stupid. So that's what I'm saying. So let's try not to keep it stupid.
This is a generic song.
It's not a generic song.
Let it roll.
It's hair metal outstandingness, man, is what it is.
Hair metal is what it is.
It's a great hair metal song.
It's royalty. Did they release? They didn't release this, did they?
I don't think so, man. But anyways, great intro to the album. Great intro song. Solid tune. Gets the body moving, head bobbing. Band's on point. John sounds great. Amazing guitar solo. Chorus is catchy. I give it an 8. I think it's an excellent tune. So
there we go. See? Now we're back to normal.
Exactly.
Thank you, Lord. All right.
It's hair metal.
Go to track two. Track two. It's called You Give Love a Bad Name.
Shut up!
Give Love a Bad Name. All right, so contrary to the opening song, there is generic songs that are out there. This is the generic one on this album.
Oh, come on, dude.
This song absolutely is pure and unadulterated. It's just a waste of space on this album. They could have skipped this album. This could have been pushed off the side.
Now I realize he's full of shit. Okay, that's fine. At first, I was like, well, generic, what?
God almighty. All right, so first of all, this is obviously one of Bon Jovi's most iconic tracks. I mean, it's a perfect blend. I mean, it's a perfect blend of what they do. Vocals, guitar, keyboard. I mean, even the drums sound great. I mean, I said this is the beginning of the Bon Jovi grift. I put that in the notes. Oh, my God. Hey, first of all, Richie Sambora's guitar sounds incredible. His little dun, 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 you know, that's a riff. It's just, I mean, it's iconic in itself. It's simple, but iconic. I mean, you can't deny it. It's timeless. This song still played to this day. Although I probably turn the channel most times when I hear it come on. I understand and appreciate what this song means to not only hair metal, but just to rock in general. It's freaking, what else can you say? It is absolutely perfection for Bon Jovi and the hard rock and hair metal genre. It's a 10. Chris.
Yeah, that man, the way that song starts, it just like throws you into it immediately. Chorus is absolutely infectious. Guitar solo is something you want to do air guitar to when you're hearing it, you know. The rhythm section in this song, I mean, they do a great job. They push the hell out of the drummer. Does a fantastic job on this song. It's one of a few easy 10s on this album. Easy 10. Yeah.
All right, Fro, what you got?
Songfacts.com. John Bon Jovi, Desmond Child, who's a very
big
well-known
name, writer.
Yes, hell of a writer. And Richie Sambora wrote this in the basement of Sambora's mother's house in New Jersey. Child came up with the title, and John immediately thought up the first line, Shot Through the Heart. From there, they put the rest of the song together with Shot Through the Heart as the working title. The song ended up being about a guy whose girlfriend is really bad for him, common material, but a very interesting way to say it. John Bon Jovi dated actress Diane Lane, who is super hot, in the mid-80s, and there were rumors that she was the inspiration for this song, but the lyrical inspiration was more of a universal feeling. And at one point, this was intended for the group Loverboy. Bon Jovi and Sambora started out writing it for them, but liked it so much they kept it for themselves.
So, no kidding.
I could hear Loverboy.
Yeah, I could hear Loverboy. This Loverboy was on top of their game at this point in time.
Yeah,
this was probably in 85 or 86.
This is more hair metal. Loverboy really wasn't that.
Yeah. The Loverboy is one of those odd bands. Like, where do they fit? Rock? Pop?
Hey, it's rock. It's rock.
Yeah, but anyways, you give Love a Bad Name, everything works. This is one of the big ones to come out of the 80s. If you want screeching guitar chords, big hair, singable chords, great vocals, you name it, this has it. It's a 10. It's perfection.
All right. Well, let's move it on up. Track number 3, Living on a Prayer. This is probably going to be arguable, but Living on a Prayer is probably their most famous song. I would dare say it's one of their, if not, it's got to be up there. It's a masterpiece as well. This thing is played in stadiums, probably nationwide for sure in the United States. I'm sure it's worldwide. Everybody knows the lyrics, whether you're just a fan of rock, country, or whatnot. We were at Country Thunder. They played this, and everybody sang along this year. I mean, loudly, too. It was like it was overcoming the PA. So that just tells you something. I don't even know what else to say about it. And it's just an anthem. The chorus, the lyrics, it makes you want to scream out the song. Plain and simple. When you're driving, you crank it. You crank it every time. Unless your wife's with you and your wife hates Bon Jovi like mine, you can't do it in the car. But nonetheless, this one is absolutely, without a doubt, perfection. It's a 10. Chris, Living on a Prayer.
I want to check, make sure your wife's not a communist or something, man. I don't know how red-blooded American can hate Bon Jovi.
I can hate him. I can hate him. I'm not a big fan of this hair stuff when it comes to him, but, you know, I'm just kidding. It's great.
Yeah, that whole whoa, is he using some sort of, like, mouthpiece to do that?
Yeah, it's a talk box. Yeah,
it's in my notes, box. So let's not get into it yet.
It's pretty impressive.
Fair enough. So let's just keep it there for now.
Okay. Leave that alone. I wasn't quite sure what that was.
It's a talk box.
This one is kind of like, and we've mentioned this, I think we said this in the last time we did Bon Jovi, like when we did New Jersey. Very Springsteen-esque type song, if you will. Maybe not like the way it goes, but the lyrics and stuff. You know, he's always about these blue-collar kind of roots and stuff. I suppose he came from, I don't know. It's probably
never thought of that way, Chris, but you're...
Yeah, lyrics, I mean, yeah. Talking about Tommy and Gina working on the dock and then the diner and, you know, never backing down and all this stuff.
It's probably a Jersey thing, too. I mean, I think a lot of Jersey's very blue-collar.
He's leaning hard into the Jersey thing. I will give him that. Basically, everything I said on a previous song applies to this one. I mean, it's just like these songs are two peas in a pod. I mean, chorus is absolutely infectious. You're right. I'd forgotten about that Country Thunder. But you're, I mean, they like killed the song during the chorus and everybody's singing it. And it's just louder than the PA system was. It was, you know, when you're waiting on the next act to come on. And the guitar solo, fantastic on this one, too. And the rhythm section pushes the heck out. I mean, it's an easy 10. Yeah. That's pretty much all I got.
Anthony, Living on a Prayer.
Songfacts.com. It says, at first, John Bon Jovi wanted to leave this off slippery when wet. Why? I have no freaking idea. He thought it wasn't good enough for some reason.
Jesus Christ.
And that's Songfacts. I don't know how deep or how good they are, but that's what they said. And according to John, a meeting with a group of teenagers changed his mind. And it was added to the album after that. I'm not sure. There was some kind of one of those things like you do with movies where they go in, I think, give listens and stuff or something like that. So anyway,
teenagers. Interesting.
Yeah. I remember it was something like that. I didn't get into all of it, but it's something like that. So
Bon Jovi and teenagers? There's no way in hell.
No way. Richie Sambora used a talk box on this song, which gave it a very distinctive sound. A talk box is an electronic device that allows a guitar player to make distorted sounds with his mouth. Peter Frampton is famous for using it on his album Frampton Comes Alive from 76. But the technique lost popularity a few years later. When Bon Jovi released this, it was the first time many young people had heard a song with a talk box in it. And Peter Frampton builds all of Richie Sambora's talk boxes, it says. So
really? That's interesting.
Songfacts.com. So take it up with them. On VH1's The Greatest Songs of the 80s, this was voted the best song of the decade. So that gives credence to some of the stuff that you guys were saying before.
I could believe it.
It may be the most famous song. It's not my favorite song. I'll just leave it.
It's not my favorite song by him either, but I understand. I appreciate what this is.
My thoughts, how do you follow up one of the bigger songs of the 80s? Well, you make an even bigger one. This song, like the last, is nothing but a 10. It's perfection. It's one of the best third songs I think we've ever covered on this podcast. It's got it all, guitars, drums, vocals, catchy chorus. I mean, not like Jimmy said, who doesn't belt this song out when it comes on the radio? And that chorus kicks in when you're going down the road. You're getting bugs in your mouth and teeth and everything. And you're still screaming as hard as you can. So, I mean, it's...
Jesus Christ, you got a windshield?
No, I don't have a windshield. What are you talking about? What the hell is a windshield?
My bad. Yeah,
I'm driving one of those 1920s crank cars. You know, one of those?
that's what I figured. Okay, I got you.
With a Victrola in the backseat, I got to turn around and spin while I'm driving down the road. Like, damn it, it stopped.
Hey, you just got to crank it a couple times. It's good to go. Off the rails. Here we go. I love it, Anthony. I love it, man. Yeah, you're right, guys. I mean, that's a 1-2 punch that you just can't beat on an album for the most part. Because let's see.
You guys
what
might
happens.
Be interested to know that on that second song, "You Give Love a Bad Name," I remember when I was listening back, it lost the battle to the Poison.
The Poison song
up against.
Yeah.
What was the song?
Talk Dirty to Me.
No, it's not. That's off of.
Hell, I don't even know. I was just thinking. I picked the Bon Jovi song, and you guys both picked Poison song. I was like, yeah, okay.
Really?
Well, now you've got my interest.
I roll hard. Yeah. What's number two on that?
Christ.
Number three.
Why would you even do that?
Well, no, it was number two. You Give Love a Bad Name is the one it was.
He's talking about You Give Love a Bad Name.
Oh.
So in our duel, Nothing But a Good Time beat this song.
Yeah, that was it. Nothing But a Good Time.
Well, I mean that's... Probably one of Poison's biggest songs, Nothing But a Good Time. You know, I mean,
it's a big one, man.
It's not as big as You Give Love a Bad Name, in my opinion. But
you know what?
If
we were to redo it today, I would probably vote this Bon Jovi song because honestly, you know what? No, I don't like You Give Love. But what the hell am I saying? I don't even like that song. I understand the iconic nature of that thing. That's why I picked Poison. I'm sure that's exactly why I picked Poison.
I'm sure. Yeah, you said something about CC's tone being better and just left it at that and moved on.
Exactly. CC's better. No, I'm just kidding. All right, let's go to track four, Social Disease. Good Lord. In the papers, in some places it comes. So, Social Disease, following arguably two of the biggest songs in Bon Jovi's career, they try to change it up a little bit with the tonalities in this tune. I mean, it is a raw, almost a bluesy vibe in this song. I mean, it certainly is showing some virtuosity as well as versatility throughout this. But This is a big but for me. This is hair metal. This is 1986 when this album came out. They're using a trumpet or some kind of brass instrument or keyboards, and it absolutely kills the song for me. They could have done something else. They could have used powerful guitar chords, maybe bass lines. I don't know. But it freaking kills it to me. And it's such a letdown from the previous two songs. This would be my flush if we were going to flush one. I gave this a 4. I think it's a meh. I think it's easily skippable. It's the weakest song on this album. I don't know how I rated it before, but listening to it again, it almost becomes unlistenable. This thing is in between a sandwich of freaking incredibleness right now. So, all right, Chris, sorry. Hit it.
Nah, that's okay.
Chris's flush of the week.
You know, I will say when I first did this review, I had to Let It Rock as the flush. But it did kind of move up a little bit for me during the week. And I thought that would have been great because I'm not sure I've ever flushed the very first song on an album before. But
that's the way to start your...
But I do think it's a little better than this song. Okay, the positives on this song. I kind of like his horns, to be honest with you. I think they come in and sound good. I get cracked up at the intro on this song. The juvenile, you know, all the women moaning, and then you hear some girl say, "You mean that's it?" And then you hear paging Dr. Bon Jovi to the emergency room. I don't know why. That cracks me up.
It's very Manowar intro.
But the song itself is so generic. It's just like... You know, there's not a strong chorus. It doesn't stick with you. It's a fun song, but it's my weakest. I gave it a good. I think it's 5. But that's the lowest I got tonight. So,
all right, before we go any further, kids listening at home, Chris, you're gonna have to answer one of the question absolutely truthfully. Were you drunk when we did this last review? Flushing freaking Let It Rock.
No, I didn't flush. Let It Rock.
Oh my god,
I didn't have the flush. Oh, by the way, I gave it a 7 the last time. But, I think it's a little worse than that, honestly. And the other two I gave 10s, obviously, both, you know.
Sure.
In keeping track of all the scores from now and previously.
All right, fair enough. All right, Anthony, what do you think about Social Disease?
I mean, every sandwich needs a condiment, right? So you've got the...
You said that
exactly.
3 years ago. Absolutely did.
I know.
Did you go back and listen to it as well?
No, I just remembered I said that. My memory's good for some things.
Steel trap, man.
Some things. You know, my wife says stuff. I don't remember everything she says. But when it comes to the podcast, I remember a lot of stuff in the podcast.
The important...
I don't know what that says about me. But anyways, hard to follow up the last two songs. But Social Disease does a solid job of holding its own. It's not as strong for sure, but it's still a killer tune, man. I think it's a 7 for me. I think it's a great tune. I still really dig it. So it doesn't turn me off or anything in that regard. So I'm still digging it.
Would you give it a 7? You think?
I give it a 7. I think it's a great tune, man.
You think it's the weakest song on this album, I'm assuming?
I don't think there is a weak one on this album. I think there's some that are not as good as other ones, but I don't think there's a super weak one.
This is one that's not as good as other
ones. I think Let It Rock, Social Disease, I mean, they kind of play in the same pool together, where I think Wanted Dead or Alive, You Give Love a Bad Name, those kind of have their own little things.
God.
The ballot towards the end.
Shut up. No.
But Let It Rock is still... Let It Rock is a better song than this one. I will give you that.
All right. That's absolutely correct.
I will give you that. But I'm saying is that there's two pools on this album. One is these songs and one is the iconic songs. And that's the two pools on this album.
And almost half of them are the iconic songs. That's what's crazy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, you got the rich people in one pool, the big songs. You got the little poor people in the other pool with the stuff in it that can't be filtered out. That's what I'm saying.
The Social Disease.
Exactly.
Oh, Lord. All right. Let's get this thing. Track 5, Wanted Dead or Alive.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is such a thing, but when you hear this song, the opening stands out so much you instantly know it. And it makes me think of something that's a mixture between country and rock at some point through the song. Cowboy rock, if you will. This thing absolutely is a banger. It stands out so much because the vocal styles, this is where you really hear Richie's pure vocals. And they harmonize together like so few can. It's a shame that Bon Jovi didn't do this more. But this song right here, you want to get your fist pumping on this one? It's a little bit of a slower, but it rocks. I mean, absolute. God, I hate to do it. But I mean, this is perfection as well. I gave this one a 10. I love this song. This is one of my favorite songs by Bon Jovi. I always have loved it. 10. Chris, Wanted Dead or Alive.
It's the best song on the album. It's the best song by the band, in my opinion. It should be their most famous. I don't know. Living on a Prayer might be more famous. To me, it's their best song, period. It's a fist-pumping masterpiece. It's got an infectious chorus. Richie's guitar solo is phenomenal. And his background vocals, like you said, man.
Outstanding.
He's probably the best background vocalist. Him or Michael Anthony in the 80s, in my opinion. I think those two were like 1A, 1B. Not much more to say. I mean, it's like I said, it's the best song they've ever done. It's an easy 10 in my book.
Here we go. Anthony, Wanted Dead or Alive.
I just coined a new term in my head. Fist-a-piece.
There you go, man. It's a fist-a-piece.
It really is.
I don't know. I'm not sure I like that.
Well, that could either be a porn title or that could be a title for this song, one of the two. God. So. God.
Dear Lord. Oh, no. We've gone down the dark road.
Anthony.
It's a, well, you know, social disease just infected my brain a minute ago. I'm still stuck.
Oh, there's
on
an infection.
Was.
You need to get that checked, friend.
All right. Songfacts.com. This song uses Old West cowboy imagery to describe the lonely life of a rock star. At the time, starting with their debut album in 1984, Bon Jovi played about 300 shows a year, using their remaining time to work on albums. When it came time to write for their third album, Slippery When Wet, John Bon Jovi and Richie Sambora wrote this song about what they knew, performing to lots of people who all blended together after a while. And it also said that this was the song that kickstarted the unplugged craze. At the 1989 MTV Video Music Awards, John and Richie performed this with just their acoustic guitars, giving the network the idea for the Unplugged series. John Bon Jovi and Richie wrote this in the basement of Sambora's mother's house. They wrote it in one day. It came easy because it was about their actual experience touring. And the band was having trouble recording this in the studio, so the producer had them take a break and enjoy some wine at a nearby restaurant. When they returned, they nailed it on the first take. So, that's all from Sweet Little Song Facts. So, you know. Anyways, Wanted Dead or Alive, man. This one might be even bigger on the album than the other two songs. I mean, it's massive. From the acoustic intro to the way it builds, to the way John and the band sound, what's not to like about it? I mean, it's another 10. It's simply perfection, so.
I absolutely couldn't agree with you guys more. I mean, lyrically, some of this stuff is insane. Sometimes you tell a date by the bottle you drink. Well, that was life on the road back in those days. That's insane. This is when these bands toured 250 days a year, and they, you know, I guess John, this is the album they became headliners on. I remember seeing Cinderella open up for them in, I think it was Knoxville I saw this, but nonetheless, this is like 86 when I saw this. Insane. Insane.
That would have been Night Songs on that one, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it was Night Songs tour. Yeah, it was their first album, and they rocked. They come out and killed it.
That would have been a good show right there.
That would have been a good show.
Yeah, I mean, it was crazy. I mean, there was more hair than you could shake a damn stick at in that show, but you know, that's the way it was. Girls with their hair standing straight up. I mean, how far? What can you say? What can you say?
And boys,
all right, guys,
too.
Let's go to track. Yeah, no doubt, right? Let's go to track 6. It is Raise Your Hands. Hit it, Chris.
You can do.
So as you guys know who listening, if you're old like us, you remember the days of the cassette tape. This was a cassette tape we all had. So this is how this album works in my mind. We have the incredible opener, according to me and nobody else on this podcast, with Let It Rock.
Hey, I like that for opening. Come on now.
And then we flip it over and they open up side two with another anthem, Raise Your Hands. I think this song is the sleeper on this album. I cannot believe this wasn't a single. They played this live. This is absolutely a high energy tune. It rocks. It gets your fist pumping. You want to sing along as this cranks out. I mean, this song absolutely keeps the momentum going as you flip this album over or cassette over, whatever you got going on there. I mean, I'm an idiot. It's outstanding. I gave it a 9. Chris, what do you think about Raise Your Hands?
I love the song.
I love it. It's my sleeper, dude.
It's a solid mid-tempo rocker in the back half of the album.
6-5.
I mean, you know, something I've noticed with Bon Jovi.
I can't help it, dude.
Every song, they try to make a rock anthem out of it. You know what I mean? And this is yet another attempt at that. It's a solid song. It is. I got no problem with it. I don't think it's quite as good as you think it is.
Sure.
But the chorus is solid. I mean, it's one that hooks me and brings me in. The last time we did this, I gave it an 8. This time I'm giving it a 7.5. Yeah.
Hey, at least it didn't go down too bad.
Between very, or not between great and excellent. So, yeah.
I don't know. I can't explain.
That's good.
All right. Anthony.
I would say in concert, they probably turn up the lights and when they do the raise their hands, I bet. I don't think at the crowd screaming. So I wish that's pretty neat to see in concert. Me personally, man, solid tune. It works. I like it. Enjoy it. Band's on point. John sounds great. No issues. I gave it a 7. I think it's a great tune. So,
Fair enough. All right. Well, let's move it to track number 7, Without Love. So, obviously, going from Raise Your Hands, an anthem, to Without Love, we are absolutely slowing down the tempo. Power ballad, of course. I'm sure this is going to be something Anthony will absolutely splurge on. nonetheless, it obviously shows the passion in John Bon Jovi's voice. You can hear the tonality change. Heartfelt lyrics, which, you know, drives the girls crazy back in those days, I'm sure. The song, I think it has a nice intensity to it when it does build up a little bit. I was torn between this one. I do think it's somewhere between very good and great. I gave this one a 6.5. Chris, what'd you think about Without Love?
Yeah, it's another. We got a little stretch here where we've got some really good songs. They don't quite live up to the iconic status, but I think they're very solid. You know, this is a even keel album. When you don't have the big one, I think your filler even, it's not really filler, but like the stuff that's not iconic, still very good songs.
Right.
And I think it's what we have here. I call this kind of like an up-tempo ballad, if that's possible. I don't really know.
I had a weird term for it too.
Okay. The part in the bridge where he's like, I've been through some changes. I like that part right there. I feel like he kind of, you know, he jovies it up a little bit, a little fist pump there, you know, when he's doing that. The one thing I will note on this song that made me downgrade it slightly is it's like there's no guitar solo. It's like a keyboard solo if you guys listen to it. If there's guitar, it's very minuscule. But that said, still catchy hook. It's not a bad tune. I gave it 7.5. Yeah. And I gave it an 8 the last time. So kind of right in the same line there. Yeah.
Fair enough. All right, Anthony, what'd you think about Without Love?
I said a really good up-tempo mid-paced rocker with a question mark.
Yeah. You can't argue it, man.
It's kind of an odd tune, but it's kind of odd. I'd say odd song signature. What do they call that? You know,
just, time signature. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I like it. Enjoy it. Got a nice groove, nice pace, solid chorus. Band sounds great. It works, man. I give it a 7.5 too. I think it's somewhere between great and excellent. So.
Fair enough. All right, guys. Well, let's head it up to track number 8. It's called I Die For You. So I Die For You. So we bring the pace back up a little bit from Without Love. You know, it does have some strong guitar riffs. I mean, you got John Bon Jovi's vocals yet again. You just feel him straining through these things. You know, not straining, I shouldn't say. He's just being passionate about what he's singing, okay?
If you heard it today, he'd be straining.
He's straining. Yeah,
definitely straining today. He couldn't fart this loud, could he? Anyway. The keyboards are what kill it for me in this song. It's just a little too much for what I like. And I know this is Bon Jovi was notorious. Their keyboards were always part of their music. And that's one of the things that kind of led me down the path of not being the biggest fan of John Bon Jovi in his 80s stuff. But dang, dude. I mean, for the most part, it fits. This one doesn't work for me. Song's still somewhat good. I gave it 5.5. I think maybe it's between good and very good. I couldn't kill this one because Social Disease is the worst on the album. This would be the second worst song in my ears. Possibly skippable in my listens, so to speak. But yeah, 5.5. Chris, what'd you think about I Die For You?
I actually disagree quite a bit with you on this. I feel like this is the sleeper on the album for me. No, I do. I think this is a sleeper. I think it's a really good blend of keys and guitar on this. Chorus, dude, you know I love a good chorus, man. This is a catchy chorus, man. It just ropes you in. It's a little cheesy, but you know that's okay. That's 80s metal when it comes down to it. I think Richie's background vocals, man, you listen to him singing through on this one as well, and there's a decent guitar solo. It wasn't one of the best, but it was a decent guitar solo. It's just a fun song, man, a fun rocking tune. I gave it an 8. Gave it a 9 the last time we reviewed it, so it's, you know, the same scale. I was right there. It's excellent.
You know what? You can put makeup on a turd. It's still a turd. All right, Anthony, what do you think about it? I'm sure he loves it, dude. I'm the butthole right now, so. All right, Anthony, go ahead.
My opening line is the second best song on the back half of the album.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
It's a solid tune,
it's
man.
A jam from start to finish. This one could have been a single. It's upbeat, fast-paced. It gets the body moving. I like the way it ebbs and flows. The guitar solo, the transitions from fast to slow. It works, man. I gave it an 8 too. I think it's an excellent tune.
All right, hold on a minute. Did you say this is the second best song in Bon Jovi's career?
No, in the back half of the album.
The back half of this album.
Oh, the back half.
Yes. There's one more better on the back half of the album. I think you guys know which one it is.
We all know what it is. Yeah, this is definitely not the second best song, but you know, it's my ears, not yours.
On the back, not of his career.
I agree with Anthony. I think it's the second best song on the B side.
Now, raise your hands, second best song on the
second.
It's
better than Raise Your Hands.
Oh, my God, no. No, no. Oh, my God. Please,
don't
please, Lord.
Romeo. I mean, hey,
if you listen to this podcast, time, please cast a vote somewhere, Twitter, Instagram, or something. Just freaking send some hate. Please tell me I'm right.
Before we end the podcast and never say goodbye, let's get on to the next song.
There you go.
Good transition, right?
I like it. All right, track 9, Never Say Goodbye. All right, guys, so let's go ahead and get this one over with. Power ballad from hell. This song absolutely is how you write a power ballad. You can argue it all you want, and I get it. Chris, you're going to probably crap on it, I know, but it's okay.
Please.
Heartfelt lyrics throughout this song. It seems like an emotional performance by Jon Bon Jovi and Richie Sambora. Song is easily memorable, vocally outstanding. The guitar solo, very memorable, stands out, although not intricate or super difficult. It fits the song perfectly. Kids, this is what high school proms and heartbreaks are all about. This is perfection for any Bon Jovi fan and ballads in general. It's a 10. Chris, Never Say Goodbye.
You went with a 10? I didn't actually go with a 10 on this one.
It hits me that hard.
I'm shocked you didn't go with 10 on this, Anthony. I'll be honest.
That's okay. I think it's perfection for ballads. I can't believe you guys see it any other way. It's okay.
Well,
I'm right.
I'll be honest. This is how I was going to do this because I just assumed Anthony was giving this a 10. I was like right on the edge of a 10, and I was going to be like, all right, guys, should I make this a perfect 30 and then just like kind of decide on the fly? It is the ultimate power ballad. It really is. I mean, and Jimmy, you know, you ruled the dance floor back in the day, man, at those high school dances. So this is probably why you feel so strongly about this song. Isn't that right? Hey, no, Anthony.
I used to look up to Jimmy in high school. I was like, my God, how does the guy do it?
Going forward, you guys will address me as Blake Shelton. Going forward.
I don't know how he did it, man. I used to envy that guy.
Well, you do. Hey, everybody tells him he favors Blake Shelton. It's true. Especially with the cowboy hat on. Regardless of all that, I mean, I tell you what, man, I'm giving it a 10. I wasn't going in. I'm going to adjust my score on the fly. I do think this is perfection for a power, man, power ballad perfection. It really is. It was a single. I'm sure it charted well. I haven't looked to see how many streams it has. Of course, you know, 80s hair metal doesn't stream like the new stuff just because there was no streaming when this was popular.
Right.
But, and man, Richie and his background vocals, just listening back to that. John, of course, obviously his vocals are awesome in this. But, man, those guys blend so well together. It is perfection. I can't deny that.
Awesome. Yeah. All right, Anthony.
Make it 30, Anthony.
Have you been swayed?
I mean, probably, yeah. You know what eventually swayed me was their concert plays on it. This is not in their top 10. It's like down in their 30s or somewhere like that.
I could see it. They probably only played this through the tour mm-hmm. for this album and New Jersey.
That's what kind of swayed my eventual opinion on it a little bit. When I look at concert plays for the album, the 10s I gave are like in their top 5.
Yeah, that's for sure.
And then
yeah.
I was like, where did this one fit? Because I was on the fence. I was like, is this a 10 or not? And that's why I gave it a 9 at Outstanding. Because it's still an amazing power ballad, the best song on the back half of the album, one of the best songs on the album. I mean, I dig ballads. I love power ballads. I don't know if it's a 10, but I can't argue that it's not. You know, I just didn't know if it didn't feel as 10 to me as the other three did on this album.
Well, sure.
If I have to be critical on a
ballot, the last time I gave it a 9.5, and that's probably where it belongs, but I don't know. I like the song. I'm giving it a 10.
I'll do it this way. I'll stick with my 9 to keep my score right, but in my heart, I'll make it a 10. How does that sound?
You can just round it up one decimal point.
Okay, this is a 10. It's perfection. Let's make it a 30 so I can sleep tonight, all right?
There you go.
That's exactly it's what it's all about, sleeping. All right. It's an awesome song. Nonetheless, let's go to track 10, final song on the album, Wild in the Streets. So Wild in the Streets, obviously closing out this album on a high note. I mean, it's an energetic song. I mean, it's, I don't know how to explain lyrically. It's kind of got this rebellious, just attitude to it. I do love that. I think it's a fitting ending song for this. I can't think of a better song to close out the album. I mean, this thing has had an incredible strong start. We had a little bit of a slowdown the second half of the album in my ears. But they do bring it up another level as they close this thing out. I think the song is great. I gave it a 7. That's how this one rolls out. Chris, what do you think about Wild in the Streets?
I think it's a solid closer. I think it's kind of a little grandiose. I mean, I think sometimes John, again, goes for the rock anthem. He's trying to grab one at the end here. I'm not sure I call this a rock anthem. But yeah, it's a solid song. I can't take credit for this. I do remember listening back to the 3 year ago podcast, and Anthony said it felt very Springsteen-ish, and I agree 100% back then. Yeah. It still does. That kind of stuck with me when I heard this again. There's an interesting guitar solo in this. It almost has like a 50s like Chuck Berry tone, something that the Sambora is doing there. I find that interesting. But overall, yeah, I came down with a 7 as well. It was a 7.5 the last time I did it, so fairly similar feel this time, too.
Fair enough. Not bad.
Decent way to end the album. Not one of their best songs on the album, but it's pretty good.
Awesome. All right, let's go, Anthony, Wild in the Streets.
It's a 21 for us on this one because I gave it a 7, too. I think it's a great. So it's a solid closer. I think it works. You know, I mean, I like it. There might be a song or two on here that might be better to close it with, but I think this good enough for what it is, you know. So it doesn't make
you curious. I was trying to figure one out, Anthony. I mean, let me guess. Do you think Living on a Prayer would have been a better closing song?
Oh, wow. Open with You Give Love a Bad Name, close Living on a Prayer.
That's what they should have done. Absolutely.
That would have been a hell of a bookend. Because I thought about it. I don't know the placement because that's a 1-2 punch right there from track three.
Raise Your Hands might be a good closer. It's a very anthemic and it's a good.
I think you could argue that one could be the opener.
That could be a good opener. I doubt if you could be a solid closer, too. I mean, it's got a great upbeat feel to it. I think it's a little bit better than this song. So,
yeah, you put I Die For You on their last, it would be a 9-song album for me.
Like I said, once you get past the big iconic songs on here, they're all kind of swimming in the same sort of area together. They're all interchangeable. They're all enjoyable and good songs and fun songs to listen to. And there's not one that's like, oh, that sucks so bad, I can't take it, you know? I mean, it's...
Exactly. Well, yeah, there's not a skipper on this album for me. I agree.
No. So.
Gotcha. All right. Curious, continue. Sorry.
It's fine.
That's it.
Good. That's it.
All right. So I got some final thoughts on this record. I mean, I had typed out a bunch of random stuff on here that went through my mind throughout the week, and it changed. You know, obviously, Slippery When Wet, I don't know if it's going to – it has to be in the top 10, maybe top 5 of greatest hair albums from the 80s, arguably. I mean, for sure. I mean, it's certainly they were the biggest name in hair, I would dare say, in the mid to late 80s. This is what put them on the map. Videos that absolutely made you go nuts. They have an album cover that got banned for this album. That just tells you they were in the craziness. I don't know if you guys ever seen the alternate.
It's on Wikipedia.
Alternate album cover is incredible.
I think Wikipedia's got a picture, right?
I'm sure it's out there. You know, and it's exactly what you would think of hair metal. You know, some girl with a wet t-shirt on top. You know, that's absolutely pure.
But you
hair.
Can't see anything. It's just a wet t-shirt True. With some rips in it.
Well, yeah, it is. But still, yeah, it's that sexuality that they push out there. And it worked for that genre and it worked for that era. But we all know the album cover as the sign. You know what I mean? Standout tracks are throughout this album. I mean, in my ears, I know you guys hated Let It Rock or whatever. Love it.
We did not. I did not hate Let It Rock. What is wrong with you, Jimmy? I enjoyed Let It Rock.
You guys are wrong. No, I'm just kidding.
I gave it a freaking 8.
You know, I know Anthony hated Let It Rock. Yeah, I was indifferent about it. Anthony absolutely hated it, man. He slammed it.
Well, you guys
telling
are
you what, man. That was...
It's outstanding. Anyway, but I mean, you know what? That
I gave
first,
it like a freaking
half,
8, man.
Yeah, you're wrong. Nonetheless.
Let me put it to bed and give it a nice hot bath beforehand. What did me do?
4 out of the first
Make
5
it a cup
songs
of tea?
Are absolutely incredible. Yeah, dude. Exactly. No, but it's so strong. It is so strong. This is a fun listen, no matter, even to this day. I mean, this is, what, almost 40 years later, and we're still listening to this thing, and it's just a wild ride. I mean, the vocal styles between, and the sharing of Richie and John on this album stand out so much as one of the greatest duos vocally in rock, I think, of all time, especially during this era. The ballads, I'm not a ballad guy, but they stand out. I mean, obviously, Never Say Goodbye is outstanding. I mean, it's iconic ever since the word. Without Love, although I didn't give it as high a score, it's a great song, too. You can sing along with that one. I mean, these are heartfelt songs that really probably charged a youth of our generation. Admit it. I mean, you know, everybody was singing along back in those days. Man, You Give Love a Bad Name. Does it get much bigger than that? Although I cannot stand that song. It's true. It's one of those songs. The album is strong, super strong. I recommend it to anybody. If you have not, if you're young and you have not gone through this journey, you got to take it. Go back and appreciate this album because this is what hair was about back in the back in our day for sure. My overall, a little higher than I thought it was going to be because I freaking gave 4 tens for the first time this year on an album, which is insanity. But it did, and I did adjust. I kind of gave Chris some hard times this morning before we got started, but it actually, my overall was 8.1 in all seriousness. I think that's fair. I think it is an excellent album. I would certainly recommend any of our friends that listen to this to go back down this nostalgic journey because that's what this is. It'll take you back. It'll take you right back to high school every single time. I love the album. Not that I listen to it a lot, but when I do listen to it, I crank it. It's great stuff. Chris, final thoughts.
Yeah, this one went about as I expected it would. 3 absolute monster hits and another close to monster hit, I guess.
Sure, sure.
Lots of fist pumping cheese, which is kind of Jovi's wheelhouse, if you will. I mean, John, he's the ultimate front man. I don't think anybody can deny that. He's one of the biggest of the decade. And Richie, I think, is one of the best guitarists / background vocalists of the decade in his generation when it comes down to it.
Yeah,
a lot of nostalgia to this. I will say, and I kind of had this thought listening to this today, just a few minutes ago, actually, and I think it may be true. I've never quite understood Bruce Springsteen's like appeal. I like his music, but man, there are people who like idolize that guy. And I think it's people that are about 10 years older than us who view him the way our generation kind of views Bon Jovi in a way. It is that like blue collar New Jersey, working man's kind of music. And he portrayed that so well in the 70s, just like Bon Jovi did in the 80s, and I guess maybe late, early 80s as well for Bruce. But, you know, that's kind of like when he built all his fans just one decade before us, one generation before us. If you meet like some boomer, man, they absolutely love Springsteen. Most of them do. And it's probably just very similar reasons, I guess, for it. You know, I mean, I think the themes of those songs are very similar to the themes that we get from early to late 80s, early 90s Bon Jovi, you know. I don't know. This is an interesting correlation.
Yeah.
Last time when I reviewed this, it got an 8.6. This time it was at 7.9, but then I gave it the tenth of a point, so it'll be 8.0.
Nice.
And I think that's you know, that's excellent. I think that's a fair review for this album or rating.
I agree with you, man. I agree with you. All right, Anthony, what are your final thoughts?
Yeah, I enjoyed diving into this one, man. It was. I'm glad Chris picked it and gave us a chance to go out on the.
It was easy, right? I mean,
it's just fun, easy pick.
Fun album, yeah.
Good album to close the year out on. You know, there are some gigantic songs on here, songs that will last the test of time, songs that will always be around, songs that were just influential to many 80s artists. Always enjoy hearing those songs again. And like I said before, beyond that, there's not really a dud on this album. They're all just really enjoyable songs to listen to. It's solid from start to finish. Thumbs up. Easy recommendation. 8.3 for me, final score, so between excellent and outstanding. So I guess if I gave it one a 10, it'd probably bump it up to, what, 8.4, 8.45, something like that. 8.4, so it would still be between excellent and outstanding. So,
hey, man, we're all right on the same page, and I kind of figure we would be. Yeah, man, what a way to go out for the year. I mean, obviously it was it's a softball. I mean, you threw a softball at us, so, I mean, what else can we say?
Well, it started with the one that would not have been a softball. But
oh, that would have been a softball.
That would be hard, man.
Jethro told you that would be.
I'd have murdered it.
That's a Randy Johnson fastball right there, man. That's a tough one.
Coming right at your noggin.
Murder it.
What was he, 6'7", something like that? Man, I can't imagine hitting off that guy.
The big unit.
The big unit. Yeah.
Lord. All right. So, well, we don't really have a pick this end. This is going to be a different kind of ending, guys. Well, the next episode.
I mean, the next album will, or the review will be our year end. Yeah, it's our thing. So.
Well, we're doing it in January, right?
Yeah.
So we're taking a few weeks off. So yeah, we'll be back next year. It'll be a summation of our year in 2023 review. Anthony, what do you got going on this week? I know you dropped the review for Jimmy Buffett's newest album last week, which was actually a very fun listen.
Oh, I'm glad you enjoyed it.
I don't agree with all your thoughts, but a lot of that stuff is a throwback to his history. And Chris, you really do need to go back and listen to that album because it really has a lot of stuff that reminds you of the 70s and the 80s. And Anthony, like you were talking about, dude, he goes through the decades. He really goes through his
decades,
and
it's
amazing how he did it because, and you're right, and I don't want to give away his whole episode, guys, because it's a great listen. It's a pretty long one, too, for you,
30 minutes.
By the way.
Yeah, I actually broke it down into two episodes. I dropped one on Monday and one on Tuesday because I had information for one on Monday. The information I wanted to put together on Monday, then I put this music together on Tuesday. So I split it in two. It had been about 50 minutes long if I'd done it all.
Dude, it was fun, man, and I think the one key note that you pointed out, and I think you are absolutely 100% right, Jimmy knew that he was going to be gone after this album.
I think so.
Because there is so much that happens from the first song to the last song, and it's that ride.
It
really is. I mean, he's got a country song on there, for the love of God.
Yeah,
he started out in country.
I mean, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. He went from his roots all the way to what made him famous, and all the way what he decided to do at the end of his career, and it goes through this whole album. So it's a pretty good ride.
Not to get off on that too much, but like I said in that episode that Mac McAnally did an interview and my information one that I went through, and he said Jimmy moved Bourbon Street to the start because that was the place he started, and put Mozambique at the end because that's a place he always wanted to go to. And so he kind of spanned his whole life between the two songs. So I think he did kind of know
where
he was going. So
it's a good closing chapter. It's almost like it's a fantastic.
And you know, honestly, it was my number. It was 200 for me. Well, I mean, it's weird how life lines up something like that, that my 200th episode wound up being the one I reviewed Jimmy Buffett's last album on.
Oh, dude. I mean, I can tell you right now that from my listens, and I've only listened to it probably a dozen times over the past 2 months. I guess it's been out for about 2 months now.
It's a great album. Maybe,
honestly, it's the best album he's released in probably 20 years, maybe a little longer.
It's a great album.
Chris, it's probably the best since Banana Win. I'm not even joking. Well, I think. I mean, that's just me. That's my ears.
I don't know. Songs from Saint Somewhere were
solid. You know, I'm not a huge, huge fan of anything from like 2010 up.
His last three, man, have been solid from the unplugged one he did for during the pandemic.
That doesn't count. That's
they consider that an album, man.
I've got it. It's the greatest hits. It's awesome. But no,
anyways, right. But speaking of greatest hits, somebody compared his new album's cover to his songs, you know, by heart cover, where he's laying in the hammock, and they almost match up the way he's laying in the hammock. So they say that maybe there's some kind of correlation there too between the fact that his most popular songs line up with the same picture on his last album. So there's a lot of it's a rabbit hole.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. I'm sure it is, man. That's awesome. All right, kids. Well, nonetheless, let's wrap this thing up. First of all, Merry Christmas to all our listeners. We won't see you until next year. For the Audible Ecstasy Podcast, this is Jimmy.
This is Chris.
This is Anthony.
And this was 2023.